We going to get everything out of every single player in here. I don't give a who you are. I'm going to find out what you can do and how you can do it and see if it can work in the National Football League on our team or somebody else's. It's constant communication. It's collaboration. It's all the words that you heard us talking about, right? This is the vision. This is what we sold. This is the plan. As players, now it's on you. How close can we get in this room? How close can we become? We got to outrun the South, right? Let's be real. We got to outrun the South. We win the South. We go to the playoffs. You get in the playoffs, you don't know what the f*** can happen. You just don't. Anything, right? Hustling precedes everything. Is everybody with me?
Yes.
Break it up, men.
Well, I think I know what will happen if they get to the playoffs. That's a different story altogether. It's a Friday edition of PFT Live. What? I've seen the movie before with a certain quarterback. Uh-oh, Miles is glitchy. Miles is glitchy. We were doing some glitchiness before the program. Miles is with me today. It's PFT Live on Peacock, Sirius XM 85, Sky Sports Action, and wherever you get your podcasts. It's nice to have someone this Friday. Last Friday, I ended up alone because sources say they tried to poison Shireen at the league meetings and succeeded. They Navalny'd Shireen at the league meetings.
Oh, my God, Mike.
Well, not quite. She is with us. She is still with
Lord
us.
Have,
is it too soon?
Lord have mercy.
Is it too soon to make a Navalny reference?
A little.
I'm making sure you're awake.
I guess, yeah.
Anyway.
And a couple weeks ago, we had some technical difficulties, so you did the first 25 minutes of the show alone. So, yes, today I am here. I am with you. I connect with you, all of those things. So Raheem Morris, when he says we got to outrun the South, I started laughing in the pre, you know, as this thing was coming on, because he's not probably the first person to say that, got to outrun the South. But Harriet Tubman also said something pretty similar at some point. That's just, I don't know, man. That's where my mind's at as we begin the show.
Anytime I see one of these speeches on camera, I want to know what the speech was when the cameras were off. Because that's the reality of anything that gets dubbed reality TV. It's never real because there's a camera there. And anybody that's ever been in a setting where you're in your normal habitat and all of a sudden there's a camera, you instantly feel your spine stiffen because anything you say can and will be used against you, especially if you say something stupid, which I am inclined to do from time to time. There have been occasions where we've had a camera in the NBC viewing room, and it's like, I better just say nothing, because usually I'll say something stupid, and I don't want it to be saved for posterity. I have
like
enough
Shireen
of that
Williams
10 hours every week. You know, that was intentional. It might be stupid, but it wasn't accidental. I have no problem with something I intentionally say that gets criticized. You just can blurt out dumb shit like that when you're in a setting where there's a camera present, other than the camera that is right there, right there. Sorry, London, and anybody else that has to endure this. By the way, speaking of things that we endure, and we got some time to kill, there's old news that has some new developments. It's been a busy week, but we had to get right into it. And Chris and I fought, so I want to have a more relaxed and freewheeling Friday. So, have you ever had a smell in your house that you didn't know where it was coming from? Have you ever had that happen?
Yes. Usually it's the trash. I watched the Succession episode yesterday where they had the bunch of raccoons in the chimney, and then Logan goes crazy on the contractor. And we were watching Succession this week. It's been amazing. I freaking love that show.
So the trash is usually the initial culprit. And
yes,
that was, I perked up when you said that, because I thought it was something in the trash. My wife agreed. We took out the trash. The smell's still there. Is it something in the drain, in the sink? What is it? It wasn't quite the smell of something dead and decomposing. I've had situations in the past where there's a dead mouse somewhere and you have no idea where it is. So you just have to deal with the smell until it stops smelling and there's nothing left to create the smell because you just can't find it. It's a horrible, awful, nasty odor. Anyway, good morning. Enjoy your breakfast. And as I was
big you can have a dead mouse and don't know where it is.
This was a different place. This was years ago.
Oh, okay.
Anyway, they get in the wall. They get in the wall and die. What am I going to do? Bust open the wall looking for the mouse? Anyway, so we have this mystery smell that is not pleasant, and we don't know where it's coming from. And I made a cup of instant coffee today just because when I wake up early and I just need to start the engine, I don't want to brew the whole pot and have it sit there for 2 hours. I just go ahead and do the, you know, put the thing in the microwave and put a scoop in and off we go. It gets the job done. So while I'm waiting for the water to heat up in the microwave, I smell that smell again away from the trash. And I'm like, what is this? And then I realize on Sunday, we roasted a turkey in a portable roaster that is great. It's big enough. You plug it in. You put the turkey in. You cook it. But you have to remember when you're done, you have to remember to clean out the roaster, which is something I failed to do. So to my dismay, I removed the lid from what I thought was a clean roaster and learned that the roaster was not clean. Ugh. And that the passage of 4 days had turned everything that had made it to the bottom of the roaster, sitting in about an inch and a half of liquids, into a very nasty funk that I had to clean up completely. It gave me flashbacks to my days of working at Kentucky Fried Chicken some 40-plus years ago, where I had to deal with that kind of nastiness every day when I wasn't cooking the chicken. And I did wash my hands between dealing with the nastiness and cooking the chicken. Anybody who survived that, anybody who wasn't Navalny'd by my culinary skills from the early 1980s. So that was my morning. It can only go uphill from here unless your computer completely glitches. There it is. Although the fryers were a lot bigger and there was a lot more grease in them. You can't throw it in. Dude,
that's dangerous.
Break the surface. Break the surface of the grease with the chicken and then let it fall. And even then it splashes back on your hands. Seriously, Miles, when I was in high school working at KFC, we can stop with that, please. Enough. It looked like I had some sort of a disease because I constantly had little red marks all over my hands from the splashback of the 360-degree shortening. You weren't allowed to call it grease. It was shortening. Grease. Yes. And then splash back onto your hands as you're dropping the chicken into the fryer. But that was for extra crispy. For the original recipe, we used this gigantic pressure cooker that I'm sure was like, you know, 10 seconds away from exploding at any given moment, especially with me operating it. So anyway, little trip down memory lane. Fun with poultry that has sat in a roaster and putrefied over the past 4 days. So happy Friday. And off we go. By the way, you know, we talk about movies from time to time while we're on the topic of topics completely unrelated to why we're here. Why didn't anybody tell me that the latest Batman movie was like really good? I tapped out of the Batman franchise really from the get-go. I was a huge Batman aficionado when I was a kid. And then the first movie that came out with Michael Keaton and Jack Nicholson, to me, was a disappointment. So I've never really been engaged in the whole Batman movie universe. And I've watched The Batman over the past couple of nights. Holy cow, that was good.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. No, dude, Robert Pattinson kills it in that movie. Lenny Kravitz's daughter, Zoe Kravitz, she's great. As Catwoman. Penguin, he's got
Paul Dano.
Paul Dano is fantastic. Also, is the Riddler. Yeah, the car chase scene in that movie.
I've never seen a car chase like that.
It was phenomenal because I remember watching that in theaters, and I don't remember if I went and saw it in IMAX or if it was just one of those nice Cinemarks, whatever it is. But man, I mean, you're sitting in the theater and that thing is rumbling. You got the great sound. You got this thing. I mean, they're going through fire. Like, it's just, oh man, I just had a big smile on my face when I watched that for the first time. That's a great movie. Absolutely. I don't know. I mean, I know I put on Twitter that was a phenomenal movie. It must have just missed my tweet because I love that movie. Yeah, I've watched it multiple times.
I muted you after about your 30th Wordle post. Then I've unmuted you since then. So this was probably in the days you were muted because it was a Wordle post every day. This is the best car chase I've ever seen in a film.
It's really good.
You're sitting there appreciating it, but also wondering, how did they film this? Like, yes! How in the world can you film this scene? Is this CGI cars? Like, what can you, like, it's impossible. Everything about it, the trucks, and it's no spoilers, but if you haven't seen The Batman, which is a couple of years old by now, go see it, because I was blown away. I was blown away. Now,
they're making a second one.
It was good enough. It was good enough. Well, of course, they're going to make a Batman movie.
Boom. See, told you. I knew I tweeted
other
about
year.
It. Look at that.
There it is. Why don't you just go ahead and. You can add more letters than ING. You can add an F. You can add a K. I mean, you can get away with it. You can ING. All right. That's okay. You don't want to get in trouble.
It's a family show. Look, in this way, we can put the tweet on television like we just did, you know? So there you go.
So
5 out of 5 stars.
Oh,
loved it.
The movie was good enough to overcome the stereotypical cliched dialogue. And I guess that's part of the charm, that the stuff Batman says is so stupid. It's just these predictable cliches. Like, I knew what was coming. I am the shadows. Like, you know, I live in the
vengeance.
Shadows. I am the shadows. Like, it was so good that it was able to supersede the intentionally cliched dialogue.
So,
oh, and
does this mean that you didn't
one
watch
scene in particular?
Okay, well, I'll let you finish on the Batman before I ask my question. Finish on this one before I ask my question, because it's going to other Batman movies.
I was just going to say that the Batmobile is awesome. I want to buy the Batmobile. I want to drive the Batmobile. There's one scene
where he pulls up
to meet with Commissioner Gordon. And it's rumbling, and it reminds me of my unofficial low end Batmobile, the Rumble. I love that Rumble, mm-hmm. and that engine rumbles, and it's great. It's awesome. All right, go ahead.
No, well, does this mean that you did not watch the Dark Knight trilogy? I mean, like you said, you checked out after the Michael Keaton movie. I mean, does that mean that you missed all the ones with Christian Bale?
No, I've seen them at some point, but I didn't enjoy them. I remember going to the theaters to see Batman Begins and like falling asleep when he's out, when he's like learning martial arts in Siberia.
Yeah,
like,
with Qui-Gon Jinn.
Yeah. And then I took my son and his friend to see The Dark Knight, and I was that The Dark Knight? Yeah, Batman Begins and The Dark Knight. I mean, I did see The Dark Knight, but I wasn't into it.
I mean,
you have to go along with the zeitgeist and go see some of these movies, especially when your son's in his formative years and he wants to go. But I didn't enjoy it. This is the first one that I've enjoyed of any Batman movie that's ever been made, from George Clooney to Ben Affleck to Jim Carrey as the Riddler to the Penguin with Danny DeVito as the Penguin, which I like that concept, and I went to see Batman Returns, and I didn't like it. This is the first – let me amend my statement. I haven't ignored the Batman movies. There wasn't one I liked until The Batman.
I don't know what you're talking about. Dark Knight. You should revisit The Dark Knight Rises. I mean, I watched a lot of Batman movies in the last year and a half, I guess, in part because of The Batman that just came out with Robert Pattinson. And so I went back and I started watching. Like, the Michael Keaton ones are kind of neat. You know, I really like Michael Keaton personally. Birdman is one of my favorite movies of all time. Like, I think that movie is phenomenal. Emma Stone's also great in that movie. So went back, watched them, you know, and you go through the Dark Knight trilogy. Like, those movies are really good. You know, I understand about, you know, the training in Siberia stuff that gets a little slow. But Heath Ledger is the Joker. I mean, my gosh, dude.
Oh, it was good. He is
phenomenal in that role. I mean, it's such a shame that,
agreed,
you know, he passed away. But my God, he was amazing.
Agreed. I didn't like, because that was probably one where it's like, okay, I'm going to rediscover Batman. And I got myself fired up for it. I just didn't like it the way that I liked The Batman. The Batman maybe because I had no expectation, low bar.
Sure.
I liked everything about it. It had a dark quality the entire time. Everything was black and gray, and
loved it.
Yeah, it was great. But by the way, if we're going to talk about Birdman, Edward Norton was by far, all respect to everybody else, because everybody in that movie is great. Edward Norton by far was the best. When he goes in to get fitted for his costume and strips down to nothing, and the dude sit there and he's like, good Lord, what's happening? Where are your underpants? laugh out loud every time. Birdman. If you haven't seen Birdman, go see Birdman. Best Picture 2014-ish, 2015. Awesome. And it doesn't stream all the time. I think it's streaming on, well, not Peacock right now, so I won't mention the name.
Another streaming
service.
In
trouble, but it'll be on Peacock at some point. Just be patient, and eventually it'll be on Peacock. All right. Thank
also,
you for
the play they do is based
awesome.
Off of what we talk about when we talk about love by Raymond Carver, which we have, you and I have privately talked about before.
Yes.
One of my favorite short stories of all time. So yeah, there's so much to love about that movie.
And I thought that was fictional. And when we've talked about Birdman in the past, I learned that Raymond Carver was real. So I got hooked on Raymond Carver like a year and a half ago, and I was devouring all of his books, all of these short stories. They're incredible.
They're fantastic.
Incredible.
They're fantastic.
All right.
Yeah.
All right. Here we go. Finally.
We've done enough.
Stephon Diggs. I think we've done enough. It's 16 minutes in. That's good. But it's Friday. Like, Friday is just kind of like, by Friday, because I feel like Thursday is Friday because it's Friday for Sims, if this makes any sense. So by Friday, I'm just kind of like, let's just have some fun. The Bills not necessarily had fun this week, but they did something they felt like they needed to do in moving on from Stephon Diggs. There was a development yesterday, which was kind of surprising. Now, when the Texans acquired the Stephon Diggs contract for $18.55 million this year, I thought, okay, what are they going to do with the rest of the Stephon Diggs deal? Are they going to give him a raise? Is he going to want a raise? Is he, you know, how do you set the right mood for this guy on the way through the door? Because one of the things we talked about yesterday, Miles, the Texans need to get to a spot early where they've got the relationship just right with Stephon Diggs. Diagnose whatever it is that's gone wrong with him in Buffalo and Minnesota and work your way around it. And make him happy. Make him want to be there. Make him want to give his all. And so what they did, they tore up the balance of the contract after this year. Gave him a little more money this year. He's up around 22-ish from 18.55. And he walks away, if he wants, in 2025 as a free agent. Or hits the market, negotiates a better deal somewhere, stays with the Texans, whatever. He can do whatever he wants after this year. So he's got a full incentive to have a big year because he's not saddled by the remaining years of his contract. And I look at that and I say that makes a lot of sense. But why are you giving up a second-round pick for that? You're giving up a second-round pick next year for a guy who may not even be on the team. It's a gutsy move by the Texans. And maybe it speaks to a level of confidence that they know he's going to want to stick around. And they'll work it out. And, you know, even if he has 1,500 yards and he becomes a hot commodity, they'll work out a way to keep him.
Well, but I think it also just speaks to the fact that they know they've got a young elite quarterback. And so it's not necessarily that you can set money on fire, but you do have money to burn when your second overall pick QB has proven that he can go out, win a division for you. He can go out, win a playoff game for you, you know, and Joe Flacco obviously helped that effort by throwing two pick sixes in a row for the Cleveland Browns. And I'm not bitter about that at all. But I think when you look at it from a holistic standpoint, you see that the Texans are a team that's on the rise. And when you have a quarterback who's not even extension eligible until after, not this season, but next season, that allows you the flexibility to go out and do some things that you might not otherwise be able to do when it comes to the salary cap and the contracts and all of that. So I think it's a move that you can make when you get your number two overall pick correct, right? When you get your head coach correct, when you are able to bring in an offensive coordinator and Bobby Slowick, who does a good job, and then you are able to keep him for that next season. It's just all of those things, I think, combined together to make it so that you can go out and get a Stephon Diggs and give away a pick that is not even your second round pick, right? Like, that's Minnesota's second round pick. So it's almost a bonus. And so that's another aspect of this that I think plays in Houston's favor.
Yeah, I think it's a mistake to view it that way, though. Once it's your pick, it's your pick. And they got that pick by doing an arm's length trade with the Vikings, giving up their 23rd overall pick in this year's draft. So there was a cost involved, and it did come from their pocket at some way, just indirectly. I have a hard time reconciling all of it. We want Stephon Diggs. He's under contract for 4 more years. We're going to allow him to become a free agent after this year. Like, if you have to do that to make a guy happy, you better be sure he's going to be great. You better be sure that this is the magic elixir that's going to allow him to be a high-end contributor, not get upset, not be... And, you know, I saw Tim Graham of The Athletic, who's been covering the Bills forever, and you can sense the swirls and the whirls of the Bills' fingerprints on his take. And I'm not being critical. I'm just saying this is what happens. When you cover one team and a move like this happens, the team's perspective makes its way into your interpretation and your analysis of the situation. And the word he used was microaggression regarding Stephon Diggs' treatment of Josh Allen and the Bills. And that's really, you know, there were some flare-ups from time to time, but a lot of it was just little things that, you know, he's a great player and you just deal with it. And they got to the point, I think, where there was just so many of these little things, it was just time for the Bills to do something big. And, you know, things that at the time, I remember we talked about them on this show, and you move on to the next topic because it's happening in the middle of football season. But after that Monday night loss to the Broncos, and his brother Trayvon Diggs starts tweeting, "My brother needs to get out of there. This is why he needs to get out of there." And Stephon Diggs never repudiates what he says. Like, that's just something that will stick in someone's craw. Why don't you come out and say, "That's not what I believe," instead of saying, you know, "Well, that's irrelevant," or "It's my brother and I love my brother." Like, why don't you just say, you know, "He's just having fun. I don't believe that. He doesn't speak for me. I don't talk to him about these things." See, I remember saying, well, of course he's picking these things up from his brother and saying these things. And unless Stephon comes out strong shooting this down, you get the impression Stephon doesn't want to be there. So there may have never been one moment where Stephon Diggs says, "I want out of here," like he kind of did with the Vikings. It was just an accumulation of a year or two of little things that come together and result in the Bills doing something big and dramatic that, for people who don't pay attention to it every day, are going to be shocked. I'm sure there were plenty of people who were like, "Holy crap." But if you follow it every day like we do, it's like, okay, this was inevitable.
I don't know if I would go with inevitable, but I think it's a logical conclusion to a story that, you know, spanned for 4 years. And you know, when Stephon Diggs and the Bills got together, when he and Josh Allen got together, it was like a match made in football heaven, right? I mean, he led the league in not just catches, but also yards in 2020 as the Bills were able to advance to the AFC Championship game. And they've just never been able to get past that, right? They've never even gotten to the AFC Championship game since that 2020 season. So then when you look at the fact that, you know, Stephon Diggs' production definitely slipped throughout the latter course of last year, whether it was because of the transition in offensive coordinator from Ken Dorsey to Joe Brady, I don't know, but he did not have a game with over 100 yards after week 6 last year, right? Like, that's something, all right? And then you look at his last 8 games, 37 catches, 349 yards, 1 touchdown. That's not elite production, and the Bills are paying for elite production, right? In the postseason, he had 10 catches for 73 yards, right? That's it. He had 3 catches for 21 yards against Kansas City at home in Buffalo. Obviously had that huge drop there in the fourth quarter on the 9 route down the right sideline. So when you're looking at it that way, it's like, man, this is not the same Stephon Diggs production that the Bills were used to seeing. And so when the production dips, the tolerance is also going to dip for everything else that comes with having Stephon Diggs on your team. And all the, you know, if we want to use that word, microaggressions that also come with that. So yeah, that's why then you see this trade happen and you find a team in Houston that says, "Yeah, look, we've got a young ascending quarterback. We want another guy that can try to help him." And even if Stephon Diggs is not at that elite of elite level, he can still be a productive receiver. So that's where I guess this just comes to its conclusion, where Stephon Diggs goes from Buffalo to Houston.
They better be sure in Houston that they can keep their young ascending quarterback from being dragged down directly or indirectly by the intense competitiveness of Stephon Diggs. That's the, and look, I come from this perspective of Stephon Diggs can do no wrong in my eyes, but there are situations where I think he merits criticism, but no, because there are occasions where it's like, you know, Stephon, I understand you're competitive, but you really shouldn't, you know, stand in your quarterback's face and throw your arms up publicly. And, you know, some of the things that overcome him when he is in the moment and wants intensely to win. Everybody who's playing professional football wants intensely to win. Things aren't going to go your way on a regular basis. You have to be able to process your disappointment and move on without potentially impairing relationship with coach, relationship with quarterback, development of young quarterback. And where Sims and I got into our fight yesterday, Miles, was when I was taking the position, because look, in Sims' eyes, Josh Allen can do no wrong, and that's been established fact since 2018. But yes, I'm a firm believer that at some point the quarterback needs to take charge of the players around him, and I don't think Josh Allen is wired to do that. It's not a criticism, it's an observation. Josh
sounds like
Allen
a criticism.
He's not wired to do it. It's not like he's choosing not to do it. We're all wired a certain way. I'm wired a certain way, as most of you well know. Miles, you're wired a certain way. We're all who we are. And somebody explained this to me years ago. Like with a quarterback, there are only a small handful of truly natural leaders. They're just guys who can throw a football better than anyone. But they play the position that carries with it an expectation that you will be a leader. And when you have a receiver who is disrespecting the quarterback in different ways, and the quarterback just sits there and takes it, and by all appearances does nothing to try to get the receiver to stop doing it, there's a point where the team needs to step in. And what I was told years ago by somebody who I think understands very well how this process should work, when you have a quarterback who isn't a natural born leader, it's incumbent on the organization to create a situation where everybody inside and outside the team comes to the conclusion that he is a natural born leader, even if maybe he isn't. And I'm not saying Josh Allen is the outlier. I'd say a lot of quarterbacks in the NFL aren't natural born Peyton Manning type leaders. We praise Peyton Manning in part because he had a knack, a willingness, a tendency, a desire to take over everything. Not in a malicious way, not in a power grab way, but he believes this is the way to win, and I'm going to come in here and make sure this is done right, and I'm going to stay up late, and I'm going to get here early, and I'm going to do everything possible that I can to contribute to this effort. And if somebody is acting up, I'm going to go tell them they're acting up. I'm going to tell them get their act together. I'm going to tell them what they need to hear, even if they don't want to hear it. Most quarterbacks aren't like that. And so I think part of what the Bills were doing, and I think ultimately this is about clearing out anyone. I thought that a little, I don't know what that was. I'm going to let it go. We'll talk about it offline. I don't know what that eye roll was, but I saw it from my lower peripheral vision. Kind of like
I don't know.
I saw something like this.
I don't know what you mean. Right.
Okay. So anyway, I think this is about, we got a guy here who's a detriment. He's a detriment to what Josh Allen is trying to become. And we only got so many years left of Josh Allen's prime. So I feel like they are deliberately taking a step back. You know, this is like where you're in a balloon. Not that this is not that I've ever even been in a balloon. But, you know, you're in the balloon and it's not flying. And so you throw stuff out of the balloon to make it fly. Even if it's stuff you like, if stuff you want, you throw it out because the balloon's got to go. So we got to throw Stephon Diggs out of the balloon basket to get Josh Allen's career to where it needs to go. And at first, it may be a little wobbly, but I think this is a longer-term play aimed at laying the foundation to let Josh Allen mature into the leader that they hope as he gets closer to 30, he'll become. That's what I think the core of this is. This is about making it clear to everyone this is Josh Allen's team.
I think it's I think there's a lot in there that, you know, you're making assumptions about, which is okay. But yeah, I think that it's not just about leadership and all that. And, you know, sometimes we don't know what goes on behind the scenes. And we publicly, it doesn't seem like Josh Allen is gonna be the same guy as a Peyton Manning, because I always think of, and I thought about this even before, you know, you said his name. There's a famous clip of him yelling at Jeff Saturday on the sideline after Jeff Saturday did something, and he was complaining about Peyton Manning, and Peyton Manning goes, "Hey, when I tell you to block, block." You know, he like gets up, he throws whatever he was reading down, and he goes over and he yells at Jeff Saturday. And Jeff Saturday has told the story many times, and he laughs about it now. But that's the kind of thing where it's field general, and we see Peyton Manning do it, and it's like, oh yeah, like that's him. Tom Brady, same thing. You know, we see him yelling at people, or used to. I guess it's still weird to me that he's really retired. We see him yelling at people on the sideline all the time, and it's interesting because you don't necessarily see that out of a Patrick Mahomes, right? But who is right now the gold standard of quarterback leadership in the National Football League? Well, it's Patrick Mahomes. And so even though, you know, at press conferences and things like that, he was defending Kadarius Toney until the cows came home, right? And he's saying all our receivers are going to get it right. They're going to do this, they're going to do that. Some of them did step up. Kadarius Toney obviously did not play in the postseason, and it's kind of weird that he's still on the Chiefs roster. But you know, there are ways where I'm sure Patrick Mahomes behind the scenes was getting something done with his receivers, whereas we didn't necessarily see that on Sundays, right? I think the most frustration we've ever seen at Patrick Mahomes was when Andy Reid told him to get his ankle checked out, and he was mad because he was potentially injured, and he was mad at Andy Reid for going and telling him to get his ankle checked out like that. So, you know, I think that there are different forms of leadership, even if we don't see it. You know, when the cameras are rolling, things can be different behind the scenes if all of that comes together and makes sense in some way.
Oh, and it does. And there are parallels between what the Bills did with Stephon Diggs and what the Chiefs did 2 years ago with Tyreek Hill.
That's
Tyreek
actually
Hill
true.
got to the point where the Chiefs no longer wanted him around. And I believe that in that 2021 season, when Cooper Kupp was threatening Calvin Johnson's yardage record, Tyreek Hill, who had a career high in targets that year, was pissed off because he thought, if Cooper Kupp can do it, I can do it too. I want to be getting that kind of attention. I want to be generating that kind of yardage. And he admitted that basically after the fact, after the dust settled on the trade, he admitted that he wanted more. And yeah, Patrick Mahomes gets to a point where it's like, we just got to move on. And Patrick Mahomes was involved with the deliberations internally and the decision making and gave the assurance to Andy Reid, I'll make this work. And they've won every Super Bowl that's been played since they traded Tyreek Hill. I don't know if the Bills are going to have the same benefit from this, but Tyreek Hill is a lot better than Stephon Diggs. I don't know where Stephon Diggs currently fits among the best receivers in the game.
That's a good question.
His production last year, as you pointed out, he hasn't 100. Like, how can you be a top 10 receiver if you haven't had a 100-yard game since week six? How are you a top 10 receiver if you're running open underneath on that third down when he would have easily had a first down, but instead Josh Allen throws to the end zone and gets hit? Khalil Shakir was open, but he gets hit just as he's throwing it. It goes incomplete, and then yada, 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 field goal's missed, and that's it for the Bills at a time when it felt like they were methodically driving down the field to try to get the win by keeping Patrick Mahomes off the field. They go into overdrive to the end zone when Diggs is open. Throw it to Diggs. He's your number one guy, or at least we thought he was. That's the real question. I've seen speculation that he may not even be the number two guy in Houston. He might be their number three receiver for $22 million this year. I mean, the money would kind of tell us they view him as a number one for $22 million. That's still in the range of number one receiver pay. But look, that's what's fascinating about this to me. You've got a team that is done with Stephon Diggs, and you've got another team that is ready to embrace him and give him a raise and let him become a free agent next year. And I wonder if part of the confidence the Texans have in doing a one-year deal with Diggs is no matter what he does on the field this year, there's not going to be a land rush of teams throwing money at him because they're going to remember Minnesota and Buffalo, and that's going to overcome whatever they remember of the 2024 season, especially because he turns 31 this year. That's the other side of it too. apart from the antics that contributed to him leaving Minnesota and leaving Buffalo, he's going to be 31 this year. How much high-end jet fuel is still left in the tank for Stephon Diggs? That's part of the risk the Texans are taking. I mean, this is a $22 million calculated risk with a second-round draft pick attached to it. Yeah, they picked up two low-round picks with Diggs, which makes the trade even weirder. They get Diggs and a sixth-rounder this year and a fifth-rounder next year for the second-round pick they gave up next year. But this is a luxury play. Chris was saying yesterday, Nick Caserio has been fascinated with Diggs since he came into the league. And this is their chance to get Diggs on the team and see what they can do. But I have a feeling if there's any type of microaggression, to use Tim Graham's term, D'Amico Ryans is going to nip that in the bud quickly. D'Amico Ryans is going to grab Stephon Diggs and tell him what's what. There, I think they hope the circumstance will speak to his better angels. And there was no problem his first year in Buffalo that we know of. But if there's anything, they got a tough schedule this year. It's not going to be cakewalk for the Houston Texans. They hit some adversity in September, October, depending upon how their schedule is structured when they get those big games. And this year they got to play in prime time and short week Thursday. And, you know, no more every week, 1 o'clock Eastern, which makes it very easy to get into a rhythm. They're going to be all over the place and everyone's going to be watching. They hit some adversity early. You better hope that you don't have an issue with Stephon Diggs. And if there is, that's when you activate D'Amico Ryans. And that's when maybe C.J. Stroud takes over that and says what needs to be said to get Stephon Diggs to stop whatever he might be doing if he's frustrated with the number of balls coming his way or the number of losses the Texans have early.
You know, I mean, it's not that we've seen C.J. Stroud in the National Football League for all that long, but he does seem like one of those guys that is one of those natural-born leaders that we were talking about. You know, just the way that folks in Houston talked about him throughout last season and how he came in. And, you know, you hear him talk publicly about wanting to represent Houston well and wanting to change all of the things in terms of the culture around the Houston Texans, right? How do people view us? How do people see us? How are people proud that we are of this city, right? That's the kind of thing where you feel like C.J. Stroud can be that guy, you know, as a quarterback. We'll see if it continues to happen that way, but that's at least the sense that I get watching C.J. Stroud from afar. And so I don't know exactly what that's going to mean when now Stephon Diggs comes into the locker room. You know, how is he going to deal with that? Is Stephon Diggs going to be a participant in the offseason program? That's another thing. I mean, he's not necessarily somebody that loves to do all those things that are voluntary. And of course, he has every right to not be there. But when you're on a new team and the new team has a still young quarterback, you do want to spend time around that guy. So we'll see how much he participates in that, I guess. But yeah, it's going to be a test of leadership, I think, with Houston to see how well Stephon Diggs integrates into the system. And like that has to do with Stephon Diggs too, and his want to and willingness to participate in what they've already got going, because it worked last year, right? They not only won the division, but they won a playoff game. So they've got something building in Houston. They feel good, obviously, about bringing him in there, because otherwise you don't pay the cost that you paid in order to acquire him. And we'll see if it works out, because it's going to be a really big test for them.
There's one arguably negative psychological human nature tidbit that works in the Texans' favor. And that's, you know, to the extent that Diggs feels like he was rejected by the Bills. And it all comes down to perspective, but if you've ever been on the wrong side of a breakup, you know, the reaction to that is you go out. What's the saying? The best revenge is living well. So he's going to want to show the Bills were wrong about him and anybody sure, that might yeah. be saying things about him are incorrect. So he'll be there with proverbial bells on for the offseason program, and he'll be locked in and he'll be present, you know, on our PFT writers text chain. That was one of the first thoughts somebody made. You may have even made it. I don't know. I read some of your texts, and as you know, sometimes I miss some of your texts.
Most of the time.
But, the idea that the Texans wanted to do this now to make sure he's there for the offseason program, not after the draft, Not after June 1, when the Bills would have taken a cap charge of only $8.8 million or thereabouts instead of 31. At a minimum, after the draft. And I, you know, look, it's just funny because the same people who kept their cards close to the vest and weren't going to tell us the truth as these trade talks were happening are now keeping their cards close to the vest and not telling us the truth about what their plans are going forward. I guarantee you the Bills didn't want to do this until after the draft. I guarantee you if they could have pulled this off, it's after, because now everybody knows with every pick the Bills take in the draft, as it is creeping toward being on the clock, you know, when you watch the draft and you see the stack and it's creeping toward, you're going to know they're going to take a receiver. Who do we think they like? Okay, let's go get, let's jump them in line to get the guy that we think they like, because we know they're going to come out of this draft with two or three receivers. They have no choice. That's why I think the Bills would have liked to have waited, and the Bills had to eventually say, if we want to get value for this guy, we better give the Texans what they want. And they wanted him, we believe, now. So he'll be there from the start of the offseason program and develop the relationship with C.J. Stroud and the team and the coaches. And this year can be. It might only be a one-year thing. This might be in the same year that the Cowboys told us they were all in. This is the type of move you make when you are all in. MDS made the 100%. Point yesterday, and it's a great observation by him. First time ever in the same offseason, one team added a 1,000-yard receiver, a 1,000-yard runner, and a 10-sack pass rusher in free agency, trades, et cetera. Two were trades. One was a free agent. Three, the trifecta, 1,000, 1,000, and 10. That shows you that the Texans are all in. The Cowboys can say it. The Texans are doing it.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, you want to use the relationship analogy again. Don't pay attention to what people say. Pay attention to what they do. You know, if they love you, their actions are going to tell you that, right? That the Texans are going through actions that show that they are all in. And it makes a lot of sense because, as I brought up before, right, they've got a rookie quarterback, a second-year quarterback on his rookie contract. So that's what really, really makes sense. And so when you add guys like a Joe Mixon, you know, you add guys like a Danielle Hunter, you add Autry, you know, even you add Stephon Diggs, like those are significant moves that can help improve you as a team. So, yeah, I think that that makes a lot of sense. But when it comes to Buffalo and doing this trade now, I think there's another side to that coin where it's, okay, yeah, the contract would make it so that they would want to do this post June 1 or what have you. But also, you now get rid of that distraction before the offseason program even begins. It does the talking point of, oh, no, Stephon Diggs is not here. Oh, is Stephon Diggs still okay? Sean McDermott, are you still very concerned about Stephon Diggs as we begin the offseason program? That's not a thing anymore, right? You get that clean slate. So I don't know if that is worth the dead cap hit of as much as it is, but that's not nothing, right? I think that there is a factor of, okay, we've been able to wipe the slate clean now. Stephon Diggs is not on our roster. He is not our responsibility to answer questions about anymore. I mean, other than, yeah, first day of the offseason program, oh, what are you going to do without Stephon Diggs, right? Okay, that's a couple questions and then you move on. So that, I think, is also a factor in this. And look, the Bills have options that they could go and maybe target at receiver. I mean, there are still veteran receivers on the market. You know, Tyler Boyd, somebody that definitely comes to mind. Odell Beckham Jr., I don't know how much he's got left in the tank, but he's out there. You know, Hunter Renfrow, if you want somebody who can come in and play that Beasley role, at least if he's healthy. And so there are options, and I think that it would behoove the Bills to certainly go out and pick up at least one of those veteran guys so that when it comes to the draft, you're not thinking every single time, oh my gosh, they're going to pick a receiver. Even though you're still probably going to be thinking that, you at least have coverage on yourself aside from what the Bills receiving core is right now, which is not particularly impressive when it's led by Curtis Samuel.
There is a middle ground, though, short of running it all the way until after June 1 and doing the trade then. And I think the Bills could have pulled it off because it's not like there's a ton of media availability during the offseason program. You still could have held them until after the draft. We're just talking about a couple of weeks. The program opens April 15th
or draft day itself.
Texans and the Bills. Right. Just get through. Right. Once you get the guy you want, then you can trade Stephon Diggs. I just think the reality is, and kudos to the executives out there who didn't blab. This is the kind of thing that we should have known about. This is the kind of thing that the insiders are supposed to be telling us. Not just 5-minute heads up that a transaction's happening. Wow, bravo. Somebody sent you a text message 5 minutes before they were going to announce the deal. This is the kind of thing that you need to be looking for, because this is the stuff they don't want us to know. As Jay Glazer told me years ago, that's the only journalism that actually happens in this space, finding out the stuff they don't want us to know. The Bills didn't want us to know that they were shopping Stephon Diggs, because once that's out there, their ability to maximize their return goes down. And I think they knew their maximum return was to do it now. The Texans want to do it now, and the Texans might very well have said, we're moving on. We do it now, or we're moving on. We want him here before the offseason program begins. Now is the time to do it, or we've got other plans out there. You mentioned the options the Bills have. You know, something we said yesterday. All of a sudden, it's an attractive destination for receivers. If I'm OBJ, yeah, I want to go to Buffalo. If I'm Tyler Boyd, yeah, I want to go to Buffalo. If I'm T. Higgins, hey, trade for me. Hello? Yes, if I'm Justin Jefferson. And now, not that they could pay him this year.
Oh, boy.
But, I mean, come on. I'm just saying, anybody out there, even guys that were previously happy with their current teams. Oh, wait a minute. Stephon Diggs is going from Buffalo. Josh Allen. 160 targets. That's how many targets Diggs got last year. 160 targets. What could I do with 160 targets? I'd like 160 targets from Josh Allen. Yes. So, I think there's another dynamic to this of, and there's no way to predict it with any certainty, but maybe over the next few weeks, there's just, you know, like how a seed spreads and grows, germinate, is that the word? There's an idea, a kernel of an idea in the brain of a receiver out there that culminates 3 weeks from now during the draft in somebody being traded to Buffalo who previously wouldn't have thought about playing for the Bills, but now wants to go play for Josh Allen. I think that's how the Bills have to view it. They are an attractive destination for receivers now, whether it's via free agency, a trade, or the draft. You could do a hell of a lot worse than go to Buffalo and play with Josh Allen.
Yeah, you certainly could. I mean, that was the first thought of my buddy from Buffalo when we were texting about this the other day. Like, oh my gosh, we got to do everything we can. We got to go get Justin Jefferson. I don't care if it's 2 first-rounders, a second rounder, and 3 threes. We got to go and we got to do it. And it's like, well, I mean, do the Vikings really want to send away the best receiver in the NFL? I mean, like, that's the kind of thing that you've got away. And so I don't know that they would be totally inclined to do that. I don't know that the Cincinnati Bengals would be particularly inclined to send T. Higgins to one of the, you know, big, let's call it juggernauts, at least juggernaut quarterbacks in the AFC, right? That doesn't necessarily make that much sense to me. But there are other teams or other guys that are out there where Buffalo certainly does make sense. I mean, if you're Odell Beckham Jr., though, and you got the knee issues that you have, I don't know if you want to play on that turf for 8-9 games a year. That's another issue. But, you know, like I said, Tyler Boyd, he's a good receiver. You know, he's been overshadowed by Jamar Chase and T. Higgins in the last few years because those guys are also really, really good, you know, but I don't think that that makes Tyler Boyd a slouch. I think that there were some weird things going on with the Raiders and Hunter Renfrow, but that's another guy that's had 1,000 yards, 100 catches. So there are guys who are out there who make sense for Buffalo and could definitely elevate that offense. It's just going to be a matter of, all right, does it actually work with the contract structure? Does it work with the place that you want to be, you know, the offense? Does it fit you? Does it suit you? And all those different kinds of things. And then certainly they've got to bring in a receiver or two or three via the draft in order to really elevate that room.
We were talking yesterday about Brandon Ayuk as a possibility for the Buffalo Bills if the 49ers are willing to trade him. It depends on what it would cost, both by way of contract and trade compensation. But you start expanding the lens a little bit and looking at those opportunities. And frankly, if I'm the Bills, maybe I'm interested in Deebo Samuel if there's a way to restructure his contract. And Deebo Samuel would now be interested in the Bills. Not that he fits, not that it makes sense, but I just think that, and as Brandon Bean, the GM of the Bills, said himself, they're going to leave no stone unturned. This is the fun part of the job, I would think. It's a challenge, But where are we going to find someone to come in and play with Josh Allen, who's going to fit with Josh Allen, who's going to be a breath of fresh air for the organization, who's going to be a good teammate, a good citizen, and a good producer on the field? That's what we're looking for. Not to imply that Stephon Diggs wasn't a good citizen. I'm just saying this is their opportunity to check every box and get a guy that when it happens, we all say, okay. Now we get it. Now we understand. Bravo, Buffalo Bills. Carry on with your quest to get back to the Super Bowl for the first time in 30 years. It's now 31 years. That 30-year anniversary opportunity has come and gone. It felt inevitable the Bills were going to get to a Super Bowl. This is their effort to try to eventually surpass Patrick Mahomes during his career and get to a Super Bowl and win it with Josh Allen at quarterback. Let's take a break. Speaking of Patrick Mahomes and the Kansas City Chiefs, the Rashee Rice situation provided more clarity. A few days late, I think somebody was in checkmate. I think somebody realized there was no way out of this. So kudos to Rashee Rice and company for doing the right thing once they realize there's no way to avoid doing the right thing. We'll talk about that next year on PFT Live.